Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station.
0-1 to Wells. Looper into shallow right field, and it is caught by Roman, and the ball game is over. The Red Sox win it 12-1. They have taken the first three in this four-game series. Crochet, dominant, big swings from Story. They erupt late, and as one-sided and emphatic a beatdown as the Red Sox have had at Yankee Stadium in years.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
We are certainly feeling good here on this Sunday afternoon. Welcome into WEEI. Dan Ball with you just after 4 o'clock here on Sunday, August the 24th, 2025. It's a pleasure to be with you after the law firm that debuted here this afternoon with Scott McLaughlin, Tom Carroll, and our boy Justin Turpin. I'm taking you up until Red Sox pregame coverage here on this Sunday afternoon. It was supposed to be just your normal 1:35 first pitch, and you'd kind of go off into your Sunday night as normal, but the schedule changed a couple weeks back. They moved it to a Sunday night baseball game between the Red Sox and the New York Yankees, and for the sake of Red Sox fans, honestly, thank God they did. For the sake of Yankees fans, I am really, really sorry, because now you get your team in prime time after the way that they've been playing in this series. Hello to those joining here on the flagship 93.7 WEEI here in the greater Boston area. Hello to those as well listening on our affiliates out in the Cape, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Worcester, Portland, Maine, Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont. If you're not in any of those areas, then you're probably listening on the free Odyssey app, and if you haven't downloaded that already, make sure you do. The number 617-779-7937. That's how you get in touch via call and via text. Myself and Brian Frazoco back behind the glass with you up until 6:10. Red Sox and the Yankees, game four of their series. Now, of course, dropping any guise of journalism and just talking as a fan as we start Red Sox, we'll talk New England Patriots football coming up in the 5 o'clock hour as we kind of wait with bated breath. The roster is at 77 right now. There are a number of names that are kind of hangers-on at the moment as the Patriots return to practice today. But as we start with the Boston Red Sox, and I just speak as a fan and a fan only to begin, how great is this? 8-1 against the New York Yankees this season. I know the Red Sox have had their warts. I know that when you look at how they compare to some of the best teams in baseball, the true contenders for the World Series, there are many an issue that I will bring up in just a moment, and many a thing that probably gives you some pause as to if they can actually compete for a World Series or not. But a measuring stick of a successful Red Sox season, one of them is how do you perform against the Yankees? And there's just something in this matchup that stinks for the New York Yankees. And I was trying to comb my way through, why can the Yankees not handle the Boston Red Sox this season? But before that, I welcome in Brian Frazoco. Brian, good afternoon. How are you?
Dan, how's it going? Doesn't it feel better to be in the afternoons? This is sort of what we're comfortable with, right? Monday through Friday, we work together, you know, 2 to 6 on WEEI afternoons. And usually when we work together Sundays, 10 o'clock, we follow KJ Carson from 8 to 10. And it feels good to be back in our normal spot, 4 to 6.
I would absolutely agree, and mainly just because I'm not a morning person.
Not
so I did that because I'm a yes man, and I say, yes, Ken Laird, I'll do whatever you want. But yeah, 4 to
Team
6
player.
Is a little bit more my speed, and I think you're right there with us. But great to have you here back behind the glass up until 6:10 as we talk about the Red Sox and the New York Yankees. Here's what I've taken away from the New York Yankees so far in this series, and we'll get to the Red Sox. The Yankees are not a good baseball team. The Yankees are one good player, one incredible player in Aaron Judge, and then a bunch of guys. And it's kind of bizarre how they go through building a team that they're going to try to tell you is a World Series contender. Because I was going through this and going, who would I rather be entering this series? Would I rather be where the Yankees are, or would I rather be where the Red Sox are? The Yankees are built with some veteran players, but definitely some unique pieces and guys that aren't part of the picture for the long term, I would imagine. Paul Goldschmidt, Cody Bellinger, even Jazz Chisholm. I mean, if I got offered a trade for Jazz Chisholm tomorrow, I'd probably go, you know what, I'm all set. You can keep him, and I'll ride with Romy Gonzalez and David Hamilton and whatever else at second base. And they also have a couple of young players that have come up and tried to, you know, crack the roster and be the next baby bombers, the next homegrown members of the Yankees. And they all kind of stink. Other than Judge, Anthony Volpe is an atrocity at shortstop. I mean, I saw the nickname Anthony Volpe E6 on Twitter a bunch.
That's a good one.
And I liked it, but I thought it was just Red Sox trolls, you know, going after the Yankees. No, it's dead on accurate. So he's bad. And I laughed out loud when I was driving home from the afternoon show on Friday, when Will Fleming is going through the defensive lineup for the Yankees, and he goes, and one of the, and you know, in his broadcastery voice, and one of the worst defenders I have ever seen with my two eyes, Jason Dominguez, out in left field for the Yankees. I'm like, man, pull no punches when you talk about him, but then you watch him try to track down a fly ball, and it makes Jaron Duran in left look like a platinum glover. So it's just a very bizarre mix of players and a manager who would make me tear my hair out if Aaron Boone was my manager. So compared to that, you have the Boston Red Sox, who obviously still have their warts and things that would concern you. I think the back half of the starting rotation right now may have leapt forward to be the biggest question down the stretch. The top of the rotation is the best it's been. Your one and your two right now with Garrett Crochet and Brian Bayo is the best that I have felt about a 1-2 punch for the Boston Red Sox in quite a long time. And Bayo is locked up long term on a good contract. Crochet is locked up long term on a good contract. And all of a sudden, Garrett Crochet is now 1-1A with Tarek Skubal for the AL Cy Young, which is not a surprise. But I think it's pretty fair to say that Brian Bayo's standing within the American League and within baseball as a starting pitcher is one of the bigger pleasant surprises that I think the Red Sox season has turned out for us this year. So sorting amongst qualifiers right now, Brian Bayo is 16th among all pitchers in baseball in ERA with a 3.07. And I mean, look at the names ahead of him. Future Boston Red Sox Joe Ryan, Jacob DeGrom, Zach Wheeler, Christopher Sanchez, Crochet, Hunter Brown, Tarek Skubal, Paul Skenes. I mean, that's elite, elite company. The guy who the Red Sox saw yesterday, Max Fried, who has an 8-year, $200 million contract, is not as good as Brian Bayo. And I give the Red Sox organization and Bayo himself a lot of credit for figuring this kid out. Because even when he was called up now 3-4 years ago, he wasn't called Baby Pedro by accident. You could tell that there was some legitimate skill. This kid had some stuff that looked like he projected out as a front of the rotation arm. The problem was he'd get into a jam with a couple guys on base. He'd give up a home run or give up an extra base hit, and all of a sudden the sky was falling. All of a sudden he was his own worst enemy. He's slamming his glove. He's screaming at himself on the mound. He's screaming at himself in the dugout. He's running down into the tunnel. And then we saw in the Clubhouse documentary on Netflix last year how rough he was on himself. So the fact that the Red Sox to this point in the season, and really since the All-Star break last year, he's been, I believe it, now at this point, a sub-3 ERA pitcher since the All-Star break last year, which is now over a season's worth of a sample size. The fact that they've been able to harness the energy and the seeming negativity and just self-doubt, all the things that seem to be rattling around Brian Bayo's head, they've been able to get him on the straight and narrow. They now have him pitching out of the stretch versus the windup, which seems to really have worked wonders for his mechanics being repeatable pitch after pitch after pitch for 90 to 100 pitches. And they also helped him work out of a pretty rough start to the season where in May he couldn't get out of the fifth inning. So Bayo has grown into a guy who you didn't think you had at the beginning of the year, which is a true number two behind Crochet, who you were pretty sure was going to be your true number one. 3, 4, and 5? Whew. Okay. Well, you still have Lucas Giolito, and he's put together, when you look at the season as a whole, a pretty solid season compared to expectation. I'm not taking anything away from him, but he's kind of alternated good and bad starts in, call it, the last 2 months. You could say it's 3 good starts for 3 bad starts, or 4 and 4. So all of a sudden, the questions around him as, I guess, your number three, they're not loud, but they're certainly there. And then 4 and 5, Dustin May, jury is very much still out. And now your number 5 spot in the rotation, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, is completely up in the air, and there are a number of different interesting, I put that a question mark, I'm Ron Burgundy, options that come at the end of that. So you have two known quantities that are two of the best. The best that I've felt about a 1-2 punch for the Red Sox in their rotation in quite a while. How about on the offensive side of things? Roman Anthony goes without saying, this has been a home run of a call-up to this point. And I criticized the Red Sox when they originally called them up because I didn't think that they were doing the best by the prospect calling them up when they did. They called them up because Willie Abreu got hurt, not necessarily because they thought that he was unequivocally ready and they were bringing him up and he had a guaranteed spot and everything was set for this kid to hit the ground running. So even with the adversity of playing right field when he hadn't played right field much, even with the adversity of, you know, jumping right into a mix and immediately being a top four hitter, then a top three hitter, then your leadoff hitter of the Red Sox within a month or two of being a major leaguer, he has done everything you could ask for. Every single thing for a rookie that you could ask for. And it's so intriguing to think that there's more here. This is only the tip of the iceberg of what he's capable of. When he, according to Nick Fitzy-Stevens, changes his swing path to hit the ball in the air more. Don't forget that.
I was going to say, just wait till he changes his swing.
I know. It's crazy. If he didn't have such a busted swing, then he might actually be worth something with this team. But no, the jokes aside on that, once he just gets more experience, once everything that he's doing, Roman Anthony, stops being the first time he's ever done it, he is going to be... He has face of the league, let alone face of the franchise potential based on what he's shown to this point. And there really just isn't a huge hole in his game. Lefty, tough lefties. You've noticed that he's had a little bit of trouble with lefties that specifically come down to the side a bit, as opposed to just coming right over the top. Like, he looked very uncomfortable against Tim Hill coming out of the bullpen, for example. Still has a little bit of work to do in terms of hitting the off-speed stuff, hitting the changeup. He struggled a lot against Brian Wu in his changeup out in Seattle. So there's a couple games where he stacked on some strikeouts. But, I mean, these are nitpicks. These are nitpicks for the face of the Boston Red Sox and the future of the franchise. So there's that, unequivocally a positive. Then there's also eight more spots that you have to fill out with this lineup. I'm running through on the fly right now, and you can join in at 617-779-7937. As the Red Sox go up against the best teams in the league, the Padres, they lose 2 or 3. The Astros, they handled well at home, but did not handle as well on the road. Then you take on the Yankees. I don't, based on what I'm seeing, consider the New York Yankees to be one of the best teams in baseball. I think they're one of the most notable teams in terms of the names they have on their roster. I think they're certainly one of the most expensive teams. And they have the league's best hitter, or second best hitter. At worst, the league's best right-handed hitter. But are they really? Do you really come away from this series going, the Red Sox are playing one of the best teams in baseball? I don't. So I don't feel as though you can get as much out of this series in terms of, I feel more confident about the Red Sox after watching them play the Yankees. I think the Yankees just kind of suck.
But Dan, they do suck, but the standings are the standings. So at the end of the day, this is a wild card team and one of the teams you're going to be competing against in the playoffs.
I think
it just speaks to how bad the AL is. I'm with you. I don't think the Yankees are very good, but I think you just look across the AL. I think a lot of these teams that are in playoff positions in the AL aren't very good.
Right.
So to me, I think I do take something away from this because these are the teams you're going to be playing. Yes, the road might end up being easy, but like at the end of the day, you play who you play and you might actually have a better shot at winning the AL, and I think this series sort of speaks to that more than anything else.
That's a fair point.
I don't think you're right. Like I think the Yankees kind of blow, and I think this series is sort of proving that.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that's a good thing. I think now you're sort of seeing like, okay, this is one of the teams that was ahead of us in the standings going into the weekend. Maybe we do have a real shot at making it to the World Series.
And let me properly contextualize where I'm at with this team too, because that's a good point about the Yankees. They're a very likely opponent if you get into October in that first round of the wild card series. I'm still trying to figure out, can the Red Sox play, be competitive in, and win a 7-game series against the best teams in baseball or the best teams in the American League? So that's Detroit, that's Houston, and that's Toronto right now, much more so than it's the Yankees. So they are peers to the Yankees and peers to the Red Sox, but that's just what I keep going back to is, okay, you have a great series against the Yankees. You preceded that by losing 3 out of 5 to the Marlins and the Orioles in just what was a bizarre 5-game situation. A lot of emotion going on with the telethon as well, so that's not an excuse. It's just a factor that was going on during the course of all this. So I try to answer life's most unanswerable question for the Boston Red Sox, which is, can they compete with the best teams in baseball? And I'm still just not entirely sure. But going step by step through the roster and where they're set up right now, I feel good about the top of the rotation. I feel great about Roman Anthony. I worry a bit about Alex Bregman breaking down a little bit and worry about where he is in terms of, is he 80% healthy versus, all right, now are we 70 to 60% healthy? Can he run? Can he field? Can he sustain it through October? And I can tell that Alex Cora and company, whoever goes into the lineup construction, are still trying to figure out where the best 9 is within this group of players. Who makes up the best 9? I certainly think Nathaniel Lowe has earned trust as hopefully a first baseman that plays more than just a platoon bat against righties. I'd like to see him get more of a run. He seems like the perfect mindset guy.
Oh, absolutely.
For what the Red Sox are trying to accomplish. He seems like he is reinvigorated. He seems like he is relocked in. I mean, this is a guy that was a top 10 first baseman in the sport before going to the Nationals, and I think it was just a bad mix between player and team and expectations of what they wanted to accomplish versus what they actually did. He looks like he is fully in on doing what it takes to be a contributing factor to a successful Red Sox team. So I'm excited about that. I'm wondering about what Seydon Rafaela, the second baseman, is going to be as a member of the offense, because his bat in the bottom third of your order is massive. Crucial to what you want to try to accomplish. So I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering where the hell Jarren Duran fits into all of this, because it seemed like for about a week they trusted him as the third hitter, and now they're going back to moving him all around depending on what the matchup is. And he just, to me, feels like the kind of guy that needs some stability in order to get everything pointed in the right direction, in order for the play on the field to match what's going on between the years. I would rather see him in the 3 spot for a month and just get a bigger sample size of if he can actually handle it than, all right, we'll hit him 3rd, then we'll hit him 6th, then we'll hit him 7th, then we'll hit him 3rd again, then we'll move him up to 1st. I would rather see a bit more stability for him as a guy. But overall, this team still proves that they should be regarded as a top 5 team in the American League. I think that's probably a fairly safe thing to say based on you're playing another top 5 team in the American League and handling them pretty steadily. But can these performances continue? Can they transfer into October? How do young guys handle the October pressure at Fenway Park with the team making the playoffs for the first time, potentially since 2021? That is something that we're never going to know. We're never going to be able to quantify and know ahead of time. It's just something that has to happen, because playoff baseball in October is certainly a different animal. 617-779-7937. Where's your level of confidence in the Red Sox? Do you believe in them as anything more than just a wild card contender in 2025? And if so, why? That's what I want to know from you. We'll talk more about the Boston Red Sox after Brian Frazoco gets you caught up on what's trending.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Yeah, he's going to go to the bullpen. You know, I talked to him last night. Brez did too, and he's his new role. We'll figure out how he goes, you know. Maybe one inning, multiple innings, whatever it is. We don't know yet, right? And he's not in the bullpen today because he just pitched, 2 days ago, 3 days ago. But whenever he's ready, he'll be there, and I know he's going to help us out.
That was Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox, just a day or so ago, talking about the fate of Walker Buehler, who was, if you missed it, removed from the Red Sox rotation ahead of this next trip through the rotation. He was scheduled to start tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles, but was removed from the rotation. And the way that Cora talked in that particular conversation with the media Doesn't look like this is going to be a temporary move. He mentioned in no uncertain terms how he doesn't want to yo-yo guys back and forth. That was, I believe, the term that he used, back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen. So this was a definitive move that was made by Cora and company. And now it brings up the question, well, what do you do next? How do the Sox solve the end of their rotation? And I think it's a fascinating conversation because if the Red Sox do have dreams of being in October, playing significant, meaningful baseball, you're going to need at least four starters. It seems as though you have three, and then you brought in Dustin May, who is currently slotted in to be your fourth. But I do think there are some options that are available to you that could give you a bit more potential, a bit more excitement, a bit more juice as you go into October. So based on the usage in this series, Richard Fitz does seem to potentially be the odds-on favorite to make the start, at least tomorrow in this spot through the rotation. I would expect this to be a rotating rotation spot for a while. I think between Fitz, between Criswell, you have at least two guys that can make a couple starts as you go through the rotation. But there are two names, two lefties, that I think a lot of fans would agree, I would much rather see what these guys have to offer in this spot. The first being Kyle Harrison, who was acquired as part of the Rafael Devers trade. Kyle Harrison, the lefty, he was scratched from his start in Worcester. I believe he was supposed to start today. He was scratched. So, theoretically speaking, he would be in line to make the start tomorrow if they needed it. The way that it's been characterized to this point, once again by the manager of the Red Sox, is that if Fitz needed to be used in any significant capacity during this series against the Yankees, then they'd probably have to, or get to, depending on if you look at this as a positive or not, they'd probably have to turn to Harrison in that spot. They have not used Fitz. He hasn't pitched in the big since July 28th. He went down to AAA for a bit, then came back up, and he's been sitting in the bullpen waiting to potentially be used, but has not yet been used to this point in the series. So if the Red Sox get another significant outing from Dustin May, and they play what is probably going to be a pretty close game if he gives you a chance to win, you go to your high-leverage arms, you don't use Fitz, he probably ends up making the start tomorrow. And if that's what I'm getting as the result of removing Walker Buehler from the bullpen, I don't know if I love it. I really don't. To break that up into a couple different thoughts, I was the one on the afternoon show a couple months ago who said that Walker Buehler was done. He was cooked. He should be DFA'd or something should be done because I can't watch this every fifth day.
Sick brag, bro.
Thank you. Broken Clock was right in that particular instance. The blind squirrel has found his nut in that particular instance.
It's always a good thing.
So, yes, I was probably a little bit hasty in saying that into a microphone on the radio, but it definitely did seem like it was trending towards this guy can't be trusted as an every fifth day option. So I am actually kind of intrigued at what Buehler could bring in just a 2-3 inning, don't let this get any worse capacity. He is the ultimate competitor. He has the mindset of a guy who I really wanted to see pitch for the Red Sox in October. I was hoping and hanging on to hope at the beginning of the season that he could be a factor in some way, shape, or form at the bottom of the rotation in October if this team got there, because he is an incredible playoff performer and did it in multiple different capacities last year. He started games. He started against the Mets in the NLCS and was tremendous, and then very famously got the last outs of the World Series against the New York Yankees. So he did whatever he was asked to do and did it pretty well after a pretty awful regular season with the Dodgers in 2024. So I was, independently of the other decisions that have to be made, I was intrigued at the idea of having Buehler as a back end of the bullpen, eighth arm. Mop-up duty is a bit of a pejorative term, so I'm not going to use that. But long guy, keep us in the game, eat some innings for us, be competitive, bring the fire, and see what you can do.
He's the guy you can put in when you're, if your pitcher craps the bed in the first inning.
Right. He's my short leash option at 100%. And I also wouldn't, I wouldn't shy away from using him in a higher leverage spot. I think mentally he can handle it. Just physically, could he get an out before he walked a guy? Is the question that we really have not seen the answer to this point this season. So independent of the decisions, I was intrigued by seeing what Buehler as a bullpen option would have. I'm kind of all set on seeing Dickie Fitz start this year. So if that's what my option is going to be for multiple turns around the rotation, I don't know why you made the decision now. To go from one guy who you don't want to be a starter to another guy who you don't want to be a starter in that fifth spot doesn't seem like you're making any progress to me. And I would kind of argue the same thing for Cooper Criswell. Much as he had a fantastic start on that Friday in a very, very high-pressure environment at Fenway Park the day after the trade deadline, much as he did that, again, that's still a guy that you didn't trust to be a starter. That's why you signed Walker Buehler and, to a lesser extent, Patrick Sandoval, because you didn't trust a guy like Cooper Criswell to come in and be an every fifth day starter. So that is why I am hoping that because you've made the decision now, because you are saying that I can no longer bear the sight of Walker Buehler starting a game for my baseball team, that you do something for the future. Let's do something fun. Let's do something that isn't just a stopgap. Even if it's just for a couple trips through right here. I'd like to see what Kyle Harrison has to offer. I really would. I know that it's been a bit, let's call it up and down in AAA. He kind of regressed his last time out. Gave up a couple of runs, scattered, I think it was 7 hits over 5 innings. He had a couple of lights out appearances before that. So that's a guy I would love to at least see. And all due respect, because they swept you in a 2-game series at Fenway last week, but he's pitching against the Orioles. I think that's a team that, though they are on the rise, they're over 500, and I think it's their last 70 games after a horrible, horrible start to the year. That's a team that you can make a little, it's a good welcome to the MLB moment.
You should have some run support in those games too, right?
I would hopefully think so. I mean, run support on this team ebbs and flows. Like they scored 12 yesterday. They're going to score 3 today. But, you know, maybe they'll still win the damn thing because this team makes no sense. So I'm intrigued by that, and it might be a little too soon for this. But the guy that has come up and been outstanding from moment 1, or honestly since the second inning that he debuted in AAA, is Peyton Tolley. And Craig Breslow, while he was asked about it at the Jimmy Fund and kind of gave a non-answer, was asked again about the idea of bringing Peyton Tolley up. And it was about as strong of an endorsement as Bresbot can give. Without giving the information away, he certainly left the door open and said that the team is not worried about how he would handle the moment. That was the feeling, the general vibe around of what he said when asked specifically about Peyton Tolley. It was, yeah, we're not really worried about how he's going to handle it. So when we see the time is right, we're going to do it. Now, he pitched recently enough that he doesn't line up directly for the start that you need tomorrow. So it could be at best it would be a spot start tomorrow, and then you catch him the next time around. Pitches, you know, within 7 days of his last start, something to that effect. But you've made the decision, and I just hope for the sake of excitement, for the sake of the future, and for the sake of potentially giving somebody the chance that could actually play a role in October. Because, I mean, I don't see Richard Fitz playing any kind of October role. I certainly don't see Cooper Criswell playing any kind of role in a playoff series. I think there's a much higher percentage chance that Kyle Harrison or Peyton Tolley, a la 2008 David Price, which is an example that I've heard ad nauseum connected to these guys, but I think it's a really good one. A guy that becomes a factor down the stretch as an exciting, up-and-coming, can't-miss arm for your team. and ends up playing a role in October. That's awesome to me. And that's what making a tough decision like moving Walker Buehler to the bullpen suggests to me. Hopefully, that you're thinking about auditioning guys that have legitimate can't-miss potential and futures in Boston. That's what I'm hoping for, at least. And it's not meant with any amount of disrespect to Dickey Fitz and Cooper Criswell and the guys that the quadruple A guys that come up and fill in admirably. You were dealt a pretty tough blow when it comes to constructing this rotation because Houck was immediately a non-factor. Cutter Crawford was immediately a non-factor. The knee injury, then the wrist injury. Like, I mean, where the hell did all that come from? You lost those two guys. Then you found something in Hunter Dobbins, and then the evil first base bag took out another victim. The Tristan Casas Memorial Evil Needs a Seance first base bag at Fenway Park takes him out, and now you're down him as well. So those are three guys that should have been able to jump in this situation. And I'd even add in a fourth. Patrick Sandoval was supposed to be back by now. What was the point of signing that guy? Could probably just end the sentence there. But what was the point of signing that guy if you weren't sure that he was going to be a part of your mix in 2025?
Well, they've done that a lot lately. Liam Hendricks, Lucas Giolito. Like, they've signed a lot of guys who, at the time that they signed them, they weren't going to pitch for them for another year.
And I would say that to Hendricks, and I would say that to Giolito, and I'd say that to Sandoval. What the hell is the point?
Oh, that wasn't me justifying it. That was just sort of me saying this is what they've been doing.
I know. No, and it's an apt point, and that's unfortunately a really, really bad rut that they've worked themselves into, which is we're going to try to recreate players in the aggregate versus just spending the money on one guy. If you didn't spend the money on Sandoval and Buehler, you could have had yourself a nice, you know, next to new Nathan Eovaldi or something in that family of pitchers who you could trust. But you didn't do that, and now those are the cards that we have been dealt. So you have a lot of they're not all fascinating, but you have a lot of options that you can go with at the back end of the bullpen. And I really hope that they use this as an opportunity to try to audition guys. I think there's no reason that Dustin May's spot as your fourth starter in a hypothetical playoff series should be written in pen or put in cement. I think right now that fourth and fifth spot should be used to get as many different unique opportunities out there to guys who deserve them. If you come away from the next, what are we at now, 5 weeks of regular season play, not even, if you come away from that, actually it is five to the nose. If you come away from that and you have one prospect who now all of a sudden you trust potentially, or you at least saw flashes of that you can be ready for in 2026, if Harrison or Tolley get an opportunity and make the most of it, that's a huge win for the Boston Red Sox. That more than justifies the decision that you made to put Walker Buehler into the bullpen now. 617-779-7937. The parts continue to move for the Boston Red Sox as they try to figure out what's the best mix. What's the mix that's going to galvanize and go down the stretch and be a baseball team that's worth rooting for into September and hopefully making it into October. I mentioned this a little bit to start off, but at least you're not a fan of the New York Yankees right now. If you're sitting out there listening to WEEI, odds are you're a Red Sox fan or at least are related or married to one. So I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt, at least you're not a fan of the New York Yankees. And I doubled down on that because I was reading replies to a tweet that was put out by Foul Territory, which is the show that Ken Rosenthal is on. The tweet was, "The replies are a judgment-free zone. Sound off, Yankees fans." And the delusion that these fans are using when looking at their baseball team makes me go, thank God I'm a Red Sox fan. We'll read some of the funniest ones next.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
The middle, Volpe dives on a knee to a backhand. He throws high to first and into the dugout. You kidding me? Lowe comes home. Rice doesn't realize it, and he doesn't make the throw.
Sucks. Feels real crappy.
This is minor league baseball.
It's all around the world.
It may look like minor league baseball, but it is a major issue for the New York Yankees in the Bronx as they attempt to do something related to playing baseball on a nightly basis. Back here on WEEI, Dan Ball with you. Red Sox and Yankees coming up with pregame starting just after the top of the 6 o'clock hour. Joe Weil will have you for that. Will Fleming, Lou Maloney on the broadcast. Those two are always a time when you get them in the same broadcast booth. So that is certainly going to be a lot of fun. Teed this up right before the commercial break. Something that was actually put on my radar because Sammy from Play Tessie responded to something, and just because of the algorithm, it popped up on my screen. A tweet from Foul Territory, which is a baseball show. Ken Rosenthal, as part of it, airs Monday through Friday at 1 o'clock. They asked for New York Yankees fans to respond in the comments, sounding off on their team. So this is presented to you just as an olive branch for Red Sox fans. Things may be bad when you get a little too close to it. You know, things are frustrating. Yes, obviously. I would like the conversation to not be Richard Fitz or Cooper Criswell for the fifth position in the starting rotation. Yes, of course. I also can't believe Isaiah Campbell ever took the mound for the Boston Red Sox. There are things that drive you nuts, but at least you're not sending things like this. So, Brian, here we go. First of all, I would give up a kidney to reverse the 2003 ALCS. So the 2003 ALCS, obviously everybody knows here what the significance of that. That seemed to put Aaron Boone on the map enough to get him the job in New York. And a lot of this is directed at Aaron Boone, which is, you know, something that we've seen a lot here when it comes to Alex Cora. But that's one. Fire Boone now, Cashman in the offseason. That's first of all, if you just ended it there, then I think you might have my support. The other half, bring in Jeter to run the team and Posada as manager. Derek Jeter, who famously has had one crack at building a baseball team.
How'd that go?
Oh, my God. He created an atrocity. The only good thing he did was trade Giancarlo Stanton, but he did the good thing for his former team, the Yankees, not what he got back for in the trade. Bring in Jeter to run the team and hire Jorge Posada, first time coach. I don't think he's coached a damn thing as your manager. Yep, that'll fix everything. So again, the old boys club knows no bounds. Bring in the old players. They're going to fix everything. It's not as simple as that, but don't tell the Yankees fans that. Fire Boone now, Cashman in the offseason, bring in Jeter to run the team, Posada's manager. A train wreck from top to bottom. Cashman is way past his prime, the Lou Lamoriello of baseball, which I actually kind of liked. Even when he constructs a decent roster, Boone does everything he can to get the least out of everyone, makes excuses, and holds nobody accountable. All can go except for AJ and GS. So you were good up until the end. Now we're trading 24 guys. So good luck with that to our guy, James. Not Boone's fault, and this is a good team. Not a great team, but good teams win in the playoffs. I see nothing about the 2025 Yankees that makes me think winning in the playoffs. And if you want to go and believe that, then good on you. I've always said this, they may judge a captain too early. Boone is horrible, but 99 hasn't stepped up in the dugout. What more could you ask from Aaron Judge? What, is he supposed to run from right field, dive in front of Anthony Volpe, get up and throw the ball to first for him? What?
And catch the ball at first.
Yes! Yeah, throw the ball and catch. Yeah,
run over and catch it.
Giselle would be proud if he was able to pull that off. But no. He's one of nine guys, and he's a superhuman individual. Of anything that you could poke holes in, anything involving Judge is beyond me on that. But, you know, he's got to be in the dugout. He's got to be tongue lashing these guys for not making these plays. What? These are all adults. The most that he can do is lead by example, give some encouragement, and that's all that you can ask for. There's only so much that a captain in baseball can do. especially if you're a non-catcher. Like, I get it. Like, Jason Varitek oversaw, you know, everything. Play calling was the epitome of organization and knowledge when it came to the Red Sox and their pitching staff. A right fielder being your captain, he's got to go up there and hit and play defense and be a good teammate and be a leader. I see no evidence that that isn't happening, but whatever. Let's just point fingers where we can. We need to fire Boone and bring Girardi back. Plus, Big G should be the captain instead of Judge. So that's what it was. It's not that Judge shouldn't be the captain. It's that they have the wrong 6'6" outfielder that can barely run being the captain. I just the reason for this exercise is nothing more than just a good laugh. Because sports fans are out of their minds, I say as a sports fan, talking to sports fans. But there is a level of delusion that comes from fans of the New York Yankees that I will always appreciate and love and laugh at until my stomach hurts. And hey, maybe they're across the way down there in the Bronx, and they're seeing and hearing and reading and listening to the way that we react to some of the things going on with the Red Sox, and saying that we're unreasonable and reacting to our general manager and our manager and the way that we've talked about this team with such disdain at the beginning of the season. Maybe they say that. But I read the opinions of people who are just throwing things against the wall that are the furthest thing from the issue. And it just kind of makes me chuckle. And it makes me feel good. And it makes me intrigued to see if the Red Sox can finish off a sweep against the New York Yankees and win their ninth game of the season against the New York Yankees. They've already won the season series, which is awesome. Now you go for the four-game sweep and a truly demoralizing finish to that series for the Bronx Bombers. 6:10 is your pregame with our guy Joe Weil. It's Will Fleming and Lou Maloney on the broadcast. 7:10 first pitch as we get you into Red Sox and Yankees coverage here on WEEI. We are going to pivot away from the Red Sox for a moment as the New England Patriots have completed their preseason. They've already started their roster cutdowns. Another roster cut came from today as they continue to figure out maybe the biggest question mark right now, which is the offensive line. The state of the Patriots after three preseason games as we get closer and closer to football. We pivot to the Pats next.